Thank you. Well, welcome, and thank you for joining me in our ongoing series of televised employee communications. In this period of rapid change, your understanding of our situation and your commitment are critical to digital success. And I believe you add more value when you have some rough idea of what's going on. My goal today is to put our recent changes into perspective for you and to share my honest optimism about our prospects for the future. We're making very good progress in the transformation of our company. While this kind of a comprehensive change doesn't happen overnight, we're well on our way to making a turnaround in the enterprise. Our customers are finding it easier to do business with digital, although we have a lot of opportunity to improve in that regard. We're making good progress in our financial goals as well. I won't be satisfied, obviously, until we're solidly profitable, return to profitability, and stay profitable. But in the meantime, it's encouraging to see that the things we're doing are having the desired effect, and we're sharply reducing our losses. If we maintain the focus that we've had on reducing our costs, and we begin to emphasize more additional revenue, it's quite clear we're going to be profitable in the near future. The issue will be to remain profitable once we achieve profitability. I want to talk a little bit about our Q3 financial results, which probably by now you've seen. But financial health is preserved. We're quite strong as far as our balance sheet is concerned. You probably know that our restructuring has reduced our costs substantially. When we started October the 1st in this new position that I have, we were losing about $3 million a day, which is a large sum by any standards. We've now reduced that in the quarter just ended to about $300,000 a day. So a factor of 10 in 6 months. This was more than the analysts expected we would be able to do. And in that regard, it's very positive. And of course, that resulted in some positive impact on our share price. You know, for the first time in 6 quarters, we generated positive cash flow. That's even after all of our investments and the downsizing monies and all of that, positive cash flow, which is very, very important. We have a lot of cash on hand, about $1.5 billion, so plenty of cash. We had the lowest capital spending that we've had since 1984. We spent just over $100 million during the quarter. One of the battles that we had for the last 6 or 7 years in this company was how in the world to get control of our engineering spending. And it was thought that here at Digital, engineering spending could only increase. And indeed, that's been the case for most years of our history. I'm pleased to report that through our efforts, we were able to reduce engineering spending quarter over quarter by 19%. And fundamentally, we've gotten out more products than ever before in our history, and better products. So reducing spending doesn't mean reducing product for your customer. It means doing it more efficiently, eliminating redundant platforms, providing what customers really want to buy more efficiently. That's what we've been able to accomplish. In the SG&A area, the general overhead area, we were able to reduce our spending by about 8%, which is not near good enough. As I mentioned, we have plenty of cash. Worldwide employment now is below 100,000 for the first time in a long time, and that, of course, helps us be more cost-effective. Some of this is captured on the slide that's behind me here. This is a slide that shows Digital's net operating revenue on the top line, and the scale for that is on the left side of this chart. And the other chart on there is the one that's precipitously headed downward, is our earnings per share. What you see is that this has been a sustained decline in our profitability. This didn't happen overnight, nor is it going to happen overnight that you turn it around. Typically, companies that have been in this shape, if they do turn it around, take 4 or 5 years to do so. The fact that we're recovering already is quite a surprise to many of the analysts and the people that follow our company. And more importantly, it's very reassuring to our customers that our company is returning to financial health. Customers want us to be profitable, and we are doing so. Now, you'll see this little dashed line here. This is the analyst forecast of where we will go in the fourth quarter. And it's a reasonable forecast, although I don't make predictions about when we'll return to profitability because it's not smart. But in any event, that is how the chart goes. The goal, the real concern I have is as we go into Q1, which is a weak quarter for us, it's weak largely because so much of our business in Europe, and Europe slows down a lot in the summer months due to the vacations that Europe takes, that fundamentally we really have to put a full court press on Q4 and Q1 revenue. Q1 is the one I'm the most worried about. We have, during the quarter as well, doubled our PC business, and our service revenues increased, and we're doing quite well. This is a slide that describes what's been going on in the industry in which we compete. And it shows sort of a bifurcation, if you will, of customer needs. On the left side, what you see is a volume-based depiction, which talks about commodity-type products and base systems. And the attributes of that particular type of the market or demand are volume, very, very competitive cost, features in terms of performance, price performance, things of that nature. And it's more the traditional box business. What you see on the other side here talks about value primarily, and this is where you see the customer business units. On the other side, you see the business units. The customer business units here talk about value from the point of view of solving a customer's problem. This is a relatively new business for Digital. We've been in the last few years, and we're doing very, very well there. In total, our service revenue during the quarter was up about 12% in total. Product revenue was essentially flat if you back out the effects of currency. And so, fundamentally, the business is doing relatively well. Our quarter was better than most analysts expected, and it was significantly better than our largest competitor, IBM, that just reported yesterday. In the case of IBM, if I recall correctly, their products revenue was off 19%. And overall, the revenue was down 13%, which gave them losses that were far in excess of Digital's, and on a per-share basis, more than twice as large as Digital's. So even though we have similar problems in the two companies, we started a little sooner addressing our problems, and the results are showing up sooner. What we've tried to do is, in recognizing that this is the way the market's going, kind of bifurcating between traditional products and new services, we've tried to organize Digital to reflect the market. Sometimes in terms of our own organization internally, it seems complicated. The objective here is to make sure that we're organized to be effective for customers, not to be more convenient for the management. And as a matter of fact, the more we get used to our new organization, the more convenient it becomes. As I go around talking to customers, I ask the customers what problems they have. They present to us our successes and our shortcomings, things like that. In my mind, I'm always testing, will this new organization better address the problems that these customers are talking about or not? And I have to say that in the 6 months I've been visiting customers with this organization in mind, every time the new organization is clearly superior to the current organization in meeting customer requirements. This particular slide shows the business units that we have at the present time. There's some component business units, a service business unit, and of course the customer focus that is solutions-oriented business units. And these are supported by the functions that you see below here. Worldwide sales and marketing, for example, professional services, engineering, manufacturing logistics, that is the supply chain, the various corporate functions, and our IM&T function. That's a foundation on which all of the business units will operate. Even so, the business units are the way we're going to run the company. And we've been quite clear about that. Now, one of the other things, the 1st of October, when I had my first sort of coming out speech and I talked to the analysts and this and that, is I made a number of commitments about what I was going to do as chief executive officer of this enterprise. And it's very important to me to be quite specific. It's my style in any event. I'll be quite specific with you today on questions. But the issue was to say what you're going to do and do it, because our company does not enjoy a reputation of credibility in the marketplace. We've been quite unpredictable. We have a history of saying one thing, doing something else. Those days are over. When we say we're going to do something, for the most part, that's what we're going to do. If there's new data, we might change the outcome. So you can always be flexible. But one of the things I committed was we're going to bring some new talent into our company. Digital had grown rather insular. That is, all of the top management of this company had been here for a very long time with mostly the same background, the same point of view on everything. You couldn't have a very rich discussion at the senior level with everybody being from the same point of view. I myself and one other person were the only, quote, outsiders, and I've been here 7 years and still considered something of an outsider. I made a commitment to bring in new talent, and we've done so. You saw in the last DVN the pictures of the various business unit managers, many of whom were new to our company, with very impressive credentials. Most recently, we've added two new talents to our company. This is Gresh Brebach, Vice President of Professional Services. He'll be running our Professional Services organization. Now, Gresh comes to us with a very distinguished career. His background is in engineering. He has an engineering degree from the University of Illinois and an MBA from the same institution. He went to work for Anderson. He rose to the very top of the United States Services activity at Anderson. He had 320 partners reporting to him, 6,000 technical employees. He then started his own firm, which was quite successful, and was bought out by his consulting firm, of course, quite successful. It was bought out by McKinsey, where he was a director of McKinsey & Company. Now, McKinsey and Anderson Consulting, these are among the very top companies. And he was the top executive in that company. We were fortunate to be able to persuade him to come to work for Digital. Why? Why do you suppose? Very successful individual. Because fundamentally, he could see the opportunity that we have in this market to be the best. To be the best in professional services. Me personally, I have very little aspiration to be less than the best. Just zero. I think we ought to be the best. We have the resources to be the best. We needed some talent to shore up the talent that we already have. So I'm very pleased. Now, Gresh is going to be joining us, I believe, on May the 3rd as a digital employee. In addition to that, we most recently announced probably the most difficult position that I had to fill, which was that of worldwide sales and marketing. Digital had been criticized, and rightly so, over the years for a lack of ability to market our products. I think in a sense, we're so much driven by our engineering culture, which, of course, I'm from engineering myself, and I identify with that. Even so, we're not very good at really marketing the products and explaining what our products do and in a way that customers can relate to that. Very often, we descend into engineering speak when what they want to hear is business speak, and they want to understand how is what we provide going to help their enterprise be more profitable. We're not too good at that. In this case, we were fortunate to recruit Ed Lucente. He's going to join us the 27th. He's actually an employee today, but he had some previous commitments. He's going to join us physically here on the 27th of this month. Ed comes to us from 30 years worth of experience at the IBM company. Again, he also has a background in engineering. He graduated from Carnegie Mellon University, where he is a lifetime trustee. His 30 years of experience in all phases of the IBM company's business, including product planning, quality, running operations. At one time, he ran all of the Far Eastern operations of their company, which includes manufacturing, engineering, and sales service and all that in the Far East. He also ran the sales and service organization in the United States. Seeing as how their company is a good deal larger than ours at that time, he was responsible for 110,000 employees. So lots of experience. More recently, he worked 3 years as executive vice president at Northern Telecom. So he has a very good appreciation now for not only the data processing side of the business and services that companies like IBM and Digital, Hewlett-Packard and that provide to the customers, but he also has experience as a customer and particularly in an important industry for us, which is the telecommunications industry. So Ed is a tremendous find for us. Both of these individuals have been very highly written up in the press, and we've been very favorably reviewed for having been able to attract them. Again, what attracted Ed to Digital? Opportunity. Opportunity. People see that we have the talent, we have the technology, we have the financial strength. We've been lacking a little bit of focus here on what we're trying to do. And that's what we're bringing in this new business model that we have. Here you see a picture of Ed Lucente. Now, the business planning process for Digital is a little more structured this year than previously. That is, we thought it might be a good idea to start fiscal 94 with the budget in place, as opposed to ending the year and writing the history of the one that should have been in place. So we're going to have a budget. It's going to be done by business units and territories. We have 9 business units. We have 13 territories. And this is a flexible deal, by the way. All of this work is a dynamic business. This is not a static thing. If you listen to my presentations and this and that, and you think that, well, everything's static now, we can relax, that's nonsense. It's a dynamic environment that we're in, and this is a dynamic organization. Some people try to describe a company like a machine. They say, well, it's like a machine, there's an engine and the wheels and this and that. That's not a very good analogy. A corporation is more like a living organism. It's something that lives and develops and grows, and if you're successful, is healthy and expanding. That's what we want to be. So it's dynamic. There's going to be a lot of change. I'm not forecasting any this morning. You know, we're going to finish the budget process with these 13 and these 9. But as we get a little smarter, we may find out we need less than 13 or more. We need less or more than 9 or whatever. In any event, the business units fund all of the spending. That means that every activity in digital has to add value to our customers as interpreted by the business units. If we can't figure out how to add that value, then we have to stop doing it. Now, we also, of course, are developing all of the business plans by functional management, and we have then checks and balances. Somebody will say to me, well, so the business units are number one and everybody else is number whatever. No, it's not like that. It's about balance. You have to have balance in an organization or an organism, and we have balance here. The idea is to have balance between people that have sales and service responsibility, systems integration responsibility, engineering, marketing, business units. Decisions and funding are made by the business units, but you need balance, and they're different skills. So I respect the skills in all of the functions in digital, and I know from experience in my own career, which I've been fortunate to work for several different companies in that, is that you're not successful unless every member of the team is able to contribute and develop and grow. So our objective here is to ensure that we have balance between the various functions and the business units, that we work together as a team for the success of our customers. And in that regard, we're going to be held successful and we will grow. Now the issue, of course, is that there's a little bit of accountability in the new digital, and that is that we know what people have signed up for. I've seen the first pass, and frankly, the first pass, absolute raw data, saw it yesterday, of the 13 business territories, rather, and the 9 business units, and it was closer than previous budgets that I typically had to deal with as vice president of manufacturing that came along midway through the year in progress. So it was already closer. So good teamwork. We still have some gaps to close, and I'm happy to say that the current plans show a little bit of growth, like to see more. They show a profit, like to see more, and we're going to be working on that. We're going to put in front of our board of directors on June the 17th. For the first time since I've been in the company, and I was told by one director, been here 12 years, for the first time since he had been a director, a business plan that ties out. A business plan where people have made commitments on what they're going to deliver to our customers and what revenue and profit they're going to deliver to digital, and where they have agreement from the sales and service organizations that deliver those solutions and products to those numbers. First time ever. So that's going to be an interesting exercise. We are committed to do it. We're not going to waffle on it. And in addition to that, for the first time ever, in addition to a two-year kind of budget, we're going to have a strategic intent for each of the business units. So there'll at least be a few paragraphs there, and in some cases much more, about what is the strategy of that business unit to be successful in their marketplace. That way we can test future investments against the strategy, and we have some idea whether or not this investment supports the strategy or does not. In the past, we have so many good ideas and we supported them all. Even so, that's not a way to have focus and to maximize the leverage on your investments. And we frittered away a lot of money by trying to do too many things that didn't really fit a strategic intent. The focus of all of this work, clearly, is on the customer. Let me describe a little bit for you what's going on in the computer industry again. If you think about it, at one point in time, up and through the early 80s, there was an opportunity for every company, including digital, to add specific value by doing some little thing better than anybody else. In our case, we did a lot better, and particularly the architecture of the VAX was an outstanding step forward in 32-bit computing. It was outstanding. And almost in and of itself, despite all of our other ineptness, that made us very successful. In the current environment and the environment going forward, the fact is all hardware products are becoming interfaced by standard interconnects. All software products are becoming interfaced by standard protocols. What this means is if you think about a value chain in computing, every little component in there could be plugged out and a new one plugged in from your competitor. This means that the probability of you having the best of everything all the time is near zero, just zero. And fundamentally, it means then, how are you going to make any money in this environment? That's what digital's struggling with, and IBM and others. It's not going to be so easy because you no longer can have one dynamite product that pays for all of your other weaker products. That means that there must be some other way to add value. Well, there is. And fortunately, digital is better positioned than any other company to do that. And that is in analyzing a customer's business problem, in integrating all of their operating systems and hardware and software products, and in implementing that solution more effectively than our competition. That's why you see so much emphasis on customer-focused business units, which is really about applications, it's about solutions, and those applications and solutions ultimately run, for the most part, on digital hardware and software products. But you don't start your sale that way. The way we start our sales today with Fortune 1000 kinds of companies is by going in and talking about what business issue is it that they are trying to solve. What problem do they have? And not surprisingly, their problems are very similar to our own problems. That's why our experience for our own company in supply chain reengineering is very popular with our customer base, because not only can we talk about it at a theoretical level, but we're doing it. We're doing it here. And we've made huge successes. As you know, in 18 months, we took out $700 million of unnecessary spending, had nothing to do with materials, just unnecessary, and improved our performance to customer needs. This is what our customers need to do. An enabler for that is information technology. Provide the solution, sell them the technology underlying that. That's the way that would go. Our objective is to be the very best in class with our own supply chain effort by the end of fiscal 95. Be the company that other people look to for success. Our organizational changes of this nature are part of our efforts, and there are many others. You know that we are moving out of the mill over the next couple of years. We're consolidating the square feet that we have. The mill represents 1.1 million square feet of very inefficient space for our purposes. We're going to move out of it. We have also 15 million additional square feet worldwide that we need to move out of. First, we moved out of all of the lease space we could. Now we need to move out of our own facilities and sell those facilities. Tremendous change in our asset position. We're working on that. We need to continue to downsize our organization to an appropriate size for the revenues that we enjoy. Me personally, that is the least attractive part of my job, and I'd like to get that behind us. I'd particularly like to get it behind us in the current quarter. The reason for that is it is no longer sustainable for us to provide the very generous transition packages that we have provided in the past. You may have noticed that our largest competitor, the IBM company, has announced that they're going to a new program starting in July with a maximum of 26 weeks of severance. How likely do you think it is that I can face my shareholders and tell them that, no, we're doing better than IBM by far, so we can afford to do more? I mean, think about it. I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. Therefore, if there is any probability that people in your organization out there will not be with us ongoing past this fiscal year, you need to do everything you can as a manager to move that action forward, get it in this quarter. You owe it to your employees to let them leave the company with the best possible transition package that we can afford. At this moment, and for that matter, throughout this entire year, you know, we've been borrowing money. Every bit of the $750 million of the first billion that we borrowed has been used for transition. Every bit. So, me personally, I'm responsible. This is not my money. It belongs to our shareholders. I'm borrowing money to give it to employees that are leaving our enterprise. This is a balancing act between what's the right thing to do for employees that are no longer able to contribute to the enterprise and the shareholders' values, shareholders' money. Now, that balance is a little bit out of balance today. We're going to have to bring that back in balance in the future. That's why I'm so intent on trying to get all of this downsizing behind us. In any event, we're continuing to work on the supply chain activity. The results of all of this activity are to make it easier for us to do business. We're focusing on being a partner with our customers. We're getting organized by business units so that customers have a very short line of sight to the management of this company. Customer issues can be surfaced easily. The whole focus is how do we make it better for the customers. In addition to that, we're bringing out new products. And you saw yesterday we introduced three new products. These are all based on our Alpha products. Fundamentally, we thought of something simple would be helpful. Why don't we just go for the number one in performance and number one in price performance? So the objective is to be the best, the most competitive, offer the most value for customers, and to regain leadership and to start growing market share. So be competitive. Be competitive. Fastest workstations under 5,000, 10,000, 15, and for that matter, at any price. We just announced the world's fastest workstation yesterday, I believe. In this particular case, it runs on a 200 megahertz alpha chip. It exceeds 100 integer spec marks and 163 floating point spec marks. Easily beats all of our competition It's our objective to stay ahead of our competition on all of that. Here's a little graph that shows our product family versus those of our competitors. We used to enjoy pretty good market share here, but the last 3 or 4 years, every year we've lost market share because our products were not competitive enough, nor were they marketed very effectively. And we did not have the operating system that customers wanted to buy, which is Unix for the workstation market. Today we have a leadership unified Unix, the only 64-bit Unix. It is incorporating most of the standards that have just recently been touted by the COSE group, which is an interesting situation. Digital's ahead of that group by almost a year in terms of unified Unix, and we have, as you can see from the chart, performance superiority at every price band, and it's our intent to stay there. We're working, as you know, on CMOS 5. By the time they get their new chips out that begin to give their similar performance, we'll be out with the next generation. So we're 6 or 8 months, maybe a year ahead of most competition as far as silicon's concerned and systems. And if we run real hard, invest intelligently, work real diligently, we can sustain it. Otherwise, we won't. But even so, we have that as an advantage. That's an inherent advantage. Our real value added, as I said, needs to be in providing real solutions. Well, let's see. In terms of operating systems, I mentioned Unix. That's what customers want to buy. We finally figured that out and got fully behind it, and we're investing heavily to have the most impressive Unix. They also want to buy NT, the new operating system from Microsoft. This chart shows that digital will be unique among the large computer vendors and that we will support equally all of these operating systems. This is not a religious issue. See, people come to me, they want, especially in engineering, they always want me to pick one. Say, well, which one is your favorite? You know, well, it depends. I don't really have a favorite. It depends on what problem is the customer trying to solve. In those situations today, where the customer is moving around billions of dollars of currency, me personally, if I'm asked to guarantee that integrity of that system, quite clearly, I want VMS. I know it works. I know we don't lose a few billion dollars in the ether. You know, Unix is coming. A lot of features are being added to Unix. And for many applications, Unix is a superior solution, or at least it's the solution on which the application rides that the customer wants to buy. We need to have the best. In the case of NT, many of the commercial applications appear to be going to migrate to NT. If they do, they're going to run better on our platforms than anyone else. But obviously, the advantage that we have in supporting all of these technologies is when a customer engages with digital, we don't have a particular bias to any particular operating system. We can sell them the best solution, and we can ensure better than any competition that all of this stuff actually works together, and that is our value added. Now, in addition to this, we've started a new brand campaign I wanted to mention, and you're going to see some ads shortly. The focus of this brand campaign, and a slightly different logo, you can't probably tell too much different about this logo. It has to do with the size of the boxes and the size of the letters, so it's easier to see from a distance, especially at my age. You can begin to see the, you know, what company it is. We're also going to freshen the color up a little bit, and this is the result of some data-driven analysis. Somebody was telling me, I can't believe you're going away from blue for digital. I was looking at our various literature. I couldn't find anything that was blue. You know, we had blacks and grays, and we had all kinds of colors. Not much standardized about our company. It's okay with me. But at least for the larger signs, and over time, not right away, spend a lot of money, don't want to spend any money. Over time, you know, get new business cards that have a slightly different color, which I prefer to think of as sort of, it's like a burgundy, like a fine burgundy wine, you know, but in any event, some people would describe it differently. We also think about ourselves, what do you think about when you think about digital equipment? What is it we're trying to do? I've been trying to tell you that some this morning. What we're trying to do is be that company whose people are the most important thing about a company, are dedicated to the customer's success through innovation. We're an innovative company. We're going to continue to invest heavily in engineering. We're going to disinvest in stuff that doesn't differentiate us, and we've been doing that. We're going to invest in the things that provide tools and capabilities so that we can be the best in providing customer solutions through innovation and through the excellence of our people. That's what we're going to do. Now, by now, hopefully, you can see that I am quite honestly optimistic about our prospects. I feel better about the company today than I have since I got this opportunity. It's a privilege that I take very seriously. I'm quite pleased with the progress that we're making and the teamwork that I'm seeing among all of the people in digital pulling together to try and bring success to our customers and therefore through our enterprise. We're going to be doing this consolidation and cost savings and that sort of thing will be ongoing. As I mentioned, I hope to get the major downsizing behind us. That doesn't mean there won't be a continued, ongoing forever, as long as I'm responsible, upgrading of the workforce. That will always be the case, bringing in new talent. People that are poor performers will need to find other companies to work for. This is a competitive environment. Each of us as an employee needs to ask what value we are delivering to the enterprise. We need to keep our skills up to date. We need to make sure that for the competition that we have the best people, the most up to date, the most enthusiastic, those the most intent on solving customer problems, doing what's necessary so the customer is successful, then we'll be able to maintain a large partnership with these customers. And the fact that any particular time some other box might be faster or some other application might be a little better won't be that critical. As the chief executive of this company, I know from personal experience what I'm looking for when I talk to one of our vendors or partners. You're looking for a relationship where you have trust, where there's confidence that the company that you're dealing with is going to treat you fairly, where for the most part, they have leadership technology and products, recognizing that it's impossible to always be the leader in everything, where you're absolutely unequivocally sure about the integrity of that company and its people. Most important thing about a company, as I've said many times, and I'll say again at every speech, is the values of that company. For this company, we have an exceptionally fine heritage of focus on values that matter. We value and respect individuals. We value and respect the diversity of our workforce and of our customer base. We look to leverage that diversity for a competitive advantage. We value competence. We value innovation. And we value teamwork. And as I said, above all, we value integrity. So thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I'd like to say that we're going to continue to have a lot of hard work. It's fun. It's exciting. It's challenging. We're turning this place around, and that's very exciting and rewarding. And I think that we're all privileged to have the opportunity to be part of Digital Equipment at this time, this particular environment. It's a privilege that I take very personally. I'm privileged to represent you to our customers. We're going to take some questions, and I want to encourage you to ask whatever questions are really on your mind. Sometimes people are a little bit timid to ask questions. If you're thinking about something out there and you really want to know the answer, please ask me. If it's legal for me to answer, sometimes it's not, around financial issues sometimes, I will give you an answer, a straightforward answer, the one I believe to be correct at this time. Doesn't mean it'll be always correct. Sometimes I make mistakes like everybody else, so what? But I'll give you a candid answer. We have some microphones here, and we're able to, if you'll raise your hand or whatever, they'll get a microphone to you so you can ask from the audience. Now, we wanted to make sure that we had employee participation from the remote geographies. And so from both Europe and GIA, we solicited some questions. We have those on tape. And we're going to start with one of those particular questions from GIA, I think. So let's see if we can hear this question.
My name is Winnie Chow. I'm from Hong Kong. I'm currently working for the Worldwide Sales Organization. My question is, with downsizing and restriction on salary increase, how would digital continue to retain and motivate top performers?
Oh, that's a good question. Fundamentally, you retain and motivate top performers, or for that matter, any kind of performer, with the environment in which people work. The most important thing, I think, is what kind of environment do you work? Do you enjoy going to work? Are you able to make a contribution? Are you personally able to grow? And oh yeah, you do need to get paid. You know, from my point of view, we have to pay competitively. You just have to. And the marketplace sets what's a competitive rate. If you want top people, you have to pay a competitive rate. You have to fund that by making sure that you are successful in the marketplace and profitable. And these things feed on each other. If you get into a situation where you don't pay competitively, you lose your best performers, you can be sure that the enterprise is going to spiral down. We have excellent talent in this company. For the most part, we've been able to retain that talent even doing all of this restructuring. But it's my intention that we have a pay-for-performance system here. But it's only a piece of it. I really believe that the most important thing is the environment and the opportunity for individuals to contribute and grow. That's what attracts people to the company. I'd like to get a question from the audience. Okay.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
My name is Peter Dillard. I'm a sales support manager in New York. A question I'm periodically asked by customers and by our partners is, what is Digital's vision mm-hmm. or what is our strategy? Mm-hmm. How would you answer that question?
Well, I get that question often, and the vision, we're going to have some vision statement, and we will have a strategic intent statement and something that will be circulated to all employees. But let me say that at the outset, for me personally, I have an understanding of what our value added is and where we're going. And it's largely what I was describing this morning, that we have a unique opportunity to be that company that can analyze, can integrate, and can install and service solutions better than any other company, where you're talking about a diversity of hardware and software products, a global enterprise. It's my belief that we have the opportunity to become the best in re-engineering consulting, management consulting, supported by this innovative technology. There will be some lofty statement that we'll craft, and we'll spend no telling how much time on each and every word, but fundamentally, so what? You know, people say to me, but if you don't have this vision statement, we can't go forward. It's just nonsense. We know what customers want. We need to provide that. And that's what this talk has largely been about. But we will have some paragraph that we can circulate around. Fundamentally, we were saying, we want to be the company that has the best people providing the most value to our customers through innovation. That's what we want to do. I think the next question is from Europe.
Hello from London. My name is Jackie Boxall, and I'm the UK Corporate Communications Manager. The first question from the Netherlands is, now that the corporation operates through business units with their own management structures, is there any further need for an area headquarters in Geneva?
Actually, there is a need for the area organizations, because there are some things we need to do across territories, resource allocation across territories, and other things that we want to collect data and whatever. But I think the role will be quite different than it has historically been. If you think about this business unit model in territories, one way or another, all overhead structures, all of them, have to be funded and supported by our customers as interpreted through the business units. That means that area organizations, whether in Europe, United States, or GIA, have to add real value to the business units or to the territories that they support. That means that their roles will change. I don't know the precise answer in what way they'll change, but I'm quite clear they'll change. And it's also quite clear that they will not be the same size they are today, nor will there be the same amount of spending. I do believe there'll be a need for these entities to exist in order to coordinate across the territories. Let's have another question from the audience.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Jean Cato, and I'm a council member of the Native American Forum. The Native American Forum and the Native American community appreciates your leadership role in addressing diversity within digital. Given the fact that there are people who are afraid to attend diversity events for fear of retaliation on their jobs or management non-support, could you please clarify the management role in diversity within the company?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Digital is a community that reflects really the global world community. We do business in 96 countries. I believe one of our great strengths, and certainly one of our most important values, is that we value this diversity, the richness of ideas that you can get, because people with different backgrounds and different experiences experience the world differently and reflect our customer base as well. This management is dedicated to supporting a program that ensures that we have a respect for individuals and respect for the different skills and backgrounds that we bring to the enterprise. We are going to have some more visible programs in the future that have to do with increasing the visibility of diversity in our management team. I'm quite pleased this year with the little bit of progress that we've made in the executive ranks. For the first time in the mill here on the executive floor, we have a woman with a very serious responsibility. Adriana Stadiker, Vice President of Executive Operations, as you know, largely responsible for crafting the processes and driving us to this point of success in this organizational redesign. A woman right down there, right next to my office, and a very valued member of the senior leadership team. It's my intention to see some diversity on my board of directors. I'm not responsible for the nominating committee at the board of directors, but I have some influence with the board. And it's my intention to bring in some diversity on that board of directors so we have a visible something's different about digital with the new management. The objective is not diversity for its own sake. The objective is a good business objective to leverage the diversity we have so that we have competitive advantage. to have equal opportunities for all our employees, to encourage all of our employees to achieve as much as they can their interests and growth in this enterprise. And again, it's a privilege to have that kind of dedication and that kind of a value system in our company. Digital, among American companies at least, was one of the early leaders in recognizing the value of this diversity. And that's something we're going to maintain a strong focus on. I think we have another question probably from Europe.
Now a question from Belgium. Why is there a total absence of Europeans on the senior leadership team?
I think Enrico Pessatori might be offended by that question. Enrico, as you know, is Italian, is one of the important business unit managers, runs our business units for PCs. But in addition, we have, when we ran the business unit process, we had an open process where we solicited applications by people that wanted to be part of the business unit structure. We didn't get as many applications from Europe, probably because most of the resources in Europe were field resources. I don't know, perhaps they didn't want to live in Maynard, that's possible. But in any event, we didn't get that many applications. But I'm quite open to having, again, at my management team, a diversity of backgrounds from geographies, whatever. I'd like to see more Europeans on the management team because fundamentally we do half our business in Europe. The other issue was, obviously, if Piercarlo Folati had chosen to stay with the company, he would have been a member of the senior leadership team. May I have another question from the audience?
Hi, Bob. My name is Bill Capers. I'm from the design group. I was wondering, how would you view a management development program to focus on the strategic intent of either the business units or digital?
Well, we're working on that. We have a strategic activity, a strategic process that's being driven by Lucia Quinn, whom I see in the audience here. And Lucia is drawing on resources from around the corporation to begin the analysis. And we did this, we had our first meeting to analyze possible outcomes. What you're trying to do when you look at strategic intent, you need a framework to do that. You need to have some idea of what is the environment that you'll be focusing on 5 or 6 years from now. What will it look like? Where will be the opportunities for a company with our resources today? This will lead you into a discussion of what core competencies you have that you can invest in and further your advantage, or what core competencies you may be missing that you need to really invest and go get if you intend to take advantage of this environment that you hypothesize. And what happens is we hypothesized a number of different scenarios, and we developed at least frameworks for talking about what would be our strategy if that were to develop. This process will be ongoing. By the way, strategic intent is not something you finish for the business plan and quit. Again, it's ongoing because the environment is constantly changing. Different scenarios have higher probability or lower probability as you go forward. You need to shape your enterprise and your investments to be ready for those things. You know, as you think about management development, what is it that really differentiates one company from another over the long term in terms of sustainable advantage? Me personally, I think it's the value system. And I think in addition to that, it's how quickly, as a result of the value system, can that enterprise learn and react to changes in the marketplace? How quickly can individuals develop their skills and continue to grow and react to bring solutions to the customers? Digital Equipment, as a matter of fact, is not the same company that we were even a few years ago. And over the history of this company, we've had several companies, really, if you think about the kinds of products we delivered, the kinds of services we delivered, and even the customer base. This will be ongoing. Our customer base in the future will be different than the customer base we have today, as well our products and services. In order to make sure that we're more agile than our competition, we have to invest in our people. We have to invest in making available training, but individuals have to invest themselves in taking advantage of those opportunities. So this is a balancing thing, again, like I spoke about before. The company cannot guarantee employment. It's an enterprise, not a government. We can't guarantee that, but we can guarantee opportunity, and we can guarantee that if you're motivated to take advantage of those opportunities, you can continue to grow and contribute. But each of us as an individual has a responsibility to ourselves to make sure that our skills are those skills that are needed by this or other enterprises. You need to invest in yourself. We will, in the management of the company, ensure that there are some basic management training. And at this moment, I'm not satisfied with our management development. We're spending more than almost any other company as a percent of revenue. We're right up there at the top. But my perception is we don't get much for that spending. My perception is that we have a lot of redundant and overlapping programs, not well thought out, and I'm asking, at least so far as management development's concerned, just stop. Just stop today. We want to stop spending all money on these various meetings that management goes to. Let's reassess where we are. Let's decide what we're really going to get behind and support. Let's ensure that it's uniform across the various geographies in which we do business. Of course, we're continuing with our technical training and that sort of thing for our customers at this moment. But the entire training needs a complete reevaluation. Not unlike many other things in digital, we have too much redundancy, too much overlap, too many activities going on that are not necessarily focused on the customer. And we're going to be in this next year, FY94, that'll be a major initiative, is assessing that, revitalizing that, and implementing a development program that everybody can get behind. We have another question from GIA.
Konnichiwa. My name is Itsuo Iso. I was hired by Digital Japan 11 years ago, and I got transferred to the States 2 years ago. Now I'm in GIA as a Japan Program Office Manager. Mr. Palmer, I have one question regarding Alpha. Now Digital and Mitsubishi signed on Alpha. What we can expect to see from this agreement? This is my question. Thank you very much.
That's a very good question. We were quite fortunate to sign Mitsubishi Electric to be the alternate source for our Alpha products. This is a first-class, well-regarded Japanese company with a very extensive technology and a history of being a very good supplier to digital, particularly in dynamic random access memories. What we can expect is that Mitsubishi will initially introduce products that we have designed as more or less a foundry service, learning the process and the technology of Alpha, and will then begin to design and develop their own products for general sale in the marketplace. This will ensure that our customers, our systems partners, of whom there are now more than 35 that are planning to use Alpha for their system architecture, have access to more than one source of integrated circuit. This is important for customers to realize that they are not going to run out in case digital doesn't have enough capacity, and also to ensure they have low prices. So my goal there is to make sure that Mitsubishi is successful, makes money, widely spreads the Alpha architecture. The objective in all of this activity is to ensure that Alpha becomes the architecture of choice for the rest of the decade and into the next century, particularly as relates to 64-bit computing. That's what we're trying to do here. That's why we're pricing our products aggressively. That's why we're competing aggressively for every possible opportunity to sell Alpha chips to our systems partners. Mitsubishi will help us greatly in that effort. I have another question from the audience.
Hi, Bob. My name is John Henning. I'm one of those middle managers that you spoke about earlier who we may have some redundancy and overlapping on, but by golly, I want to help the company. I really want to see it succeed. And when the company is losing money, I see lots of things done to control how the money is spent. Very careful controls over hiring people, over buying yellow sticky notepads, over buying third-party software. But there's this other value of pushing the decisions down to where you can have the agility to respond to the local situation. When you say there'll be a budget by July 1st, on July 1st, will I be able to decide whether yellow sticky pads are needed for my group?
Well, you should be able to decide today. That's kind of a funny thing in that. I would agree with your observations. My objective is to push authority and responsibility down. And from time to time, we have things that come out of my office, apparently, that get misinterpreted or whatever in terms of controls. And we end up controlling nits that don't make any difference whatsoever and missing the really big things that matter. That's part of the problem of this restructuring. You know, the bureaucracies of whatever type, management bureaucracies or whatever, defend themselves by complexity and by trying to offer value added by having to approve everything. It's just nonsense that you can't buy the materials locally that you need to do your business. And that's not my intent. I give you a lot of examples. I was talking to someone in professional services who's out there calling on customers, trying to do bidding on jobs and this and that, can't get a personal computer. We manufacture personal computers. We claim that they are an efficiency tool, particularly laptops and whatever. But our salesperson can't get one. To get one needs all kinds of signatures and authorities. That's nonsense. The idea is to get this organized by business units, and those business units will be driving, hopefully, more rational behavior. One of the problems when you have something as large as we are, and it was managed without clear accountability and responsibility. Nobody knows who can authorize anything, but everybody wants to add value, so send me the thing, and unless I sign it, you can't do anything. Nonsense. You know, what we need to do is get the minimum number of signatures that really add value on any of these things. And we recently, by the way, revised all of our signature authorization, and that policy is coming out. My objective is to empower people, so people close to the work know what they need to do. And my belief is that for the most part, 98% or something of the people will do the right thing. This is my belief. It's the idea of do the right thing, is that most of the people, there will be, it's a large population, one or two people that take advantage of it at all levels, you know, in the organization. Eventually, those people will expose themselves and they'll leave our enterprise. But for the most part, you can trust people to make good business decisions. So the idea is to push that authority down. Those business units that empower the employees and give them the freedom to do their jobs will be the most successful. And so my job function is to try and promote that philosophy, leave it up to the business units to implement that. We have another question from Europe.
From Germany, the question is regarding the Alpha AXP program. It has generated a lot of interest in Europe. Everything appears to be developing ahead of schedule, but the corporation is already starting to cut product prices. Is everything okay?
The objective is to be competitive. And we are coming from a position of having lost market share year after year after year by not listening to our customers and not responding, by not providing the operating system they wanted, by not having leadership products. It's nice having the superior operating system and leadership products. Why don't we price it aggressively and make the other competitors perspire a little bit? And so that's what we're doing. We want to drive market share. We want to establish Alpha as the architecture. I hope all of the people out there that are understanding this will listen carefully to what I'm about to say. The strategy in your territory is for digital to be the price performance leader in every price band in which we have a product. That doesn't mean to give the product away, but that means that in every geography, and the pricing, not surprisingly, is different in every geography. Local conditions are different. But in every territory, when we're competing with Hewlett-Packard, IBM, Sun Microsystems, digital equipment should offer more for a given price. That's simple. May I have a question from the audience, please?
Bob, my name is Cynthia LaPierre from Multivendor Customer Services. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you mention a couple of things today, like partnership. And my question to you is about strategies. We have the 9 separate business units. Mm-hmm. And in order to look like a partner to our customer, we also not only have to translate each business unit down through their organization, but are there strategies to make sure that there's open communications across business units so the business units look like partners to our customers?
I think that's an excellent question, and there is a strategy for that, and it's largely at my level, you know, at the senior leadership team, to ensure that partners work together. A good example would be the partnership between, say, professional services and sales. This particular partnership has to start at the top, and so I'm quite intent, and in fact, I've already selected the offices for Gresh Breebach and Ed Lucente, and they're right next to each other, and they're right next to the office of Bill Strecker. So you have all three of those offices right there, and then I'm right across from those to make sure that at the top, we're going to cooperate, we're going to work the issues together, and that should permeate through the organization.
Okay, what I'd like you to do is flip the tape over, rewind to the beginning of side B for the remainder of the video. Thank you.